Now I made you a very special dish.
It's spaghetti, but instead of meatballs, it's raisin balls. They look the same, but they taste very different. Do you want to know what they symbolize?
Yes.
So, I'm the kind of gal who tries to make the best of things. And since meatballs will never ever exist again, I said, Carol, get your hands up, grab some raisins, and you smash them into a ball, girl. I know we're not each other's soulmates, parentheses, meatballs, but if we give it a little effort, perhaps we can make it work, huh? Parentheses, raisin balls. So we might as well dig into the raisin balls, parentheses, life we've been given. These have turned. You might want to just eat around them.
Yeah.
TBTL!
We're the number one show in hospitals and on sinking riverboat casinos.
This is about respect. This is about personal space. This is about the violation.
Hey, skip to the end.
Got it. Here's the long and short of it. Someone has been touching my karaoke machine.
This is Mr. T, and I want to tell you out there in radio land, you better keep listening to this station. And if you don't, I'm coming after you.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL.
Oh, you're going to love the Liff and Tweedle out of this.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
You want showmanship? You got it.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Like, maybe 2 minutes ago, the door here in the broadcast center was still open. We hadn't started the show. We were about to. And the pod dog was just wandering down the hall, and she just stopped and just looked into the room.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
And I said to her, hey, you wanna watch me do a podcast? And she just looked at me with, I mean, is it possible for a dog to pity a human? Like, it was the most...
You're still doing a podcast?
She looked at me like I was the most pathetic creature on earth. And then she just turned her head forward again and then just continued meandering down to the TV room. She would rather be alone in the TV room than in here watching Dad work. That's all right. I'm not going to let it get to me here on episode 3,195 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Carl Reiner has passed away, quite sadly, a comedy legend who I have to say I mostly knew about him for his amazing friendship with Mel Brooks, which we'll talk about coming up. Also, speaking of comedians, Sacha Baron Cohen has apparently been out doing his pranking again.
How about like pranking an animal?
Pranking some far right wingers in Olympia, Washington, actually. So we'll tell you what happened with that. And they are going to have a virtual Tour de France. Like, I'm not a person who really knows very much about cycling, and I'm not a person who knows very much about the virtual world. And yet today I was watching a preview of the virtual Tour de France, and
I hate to say it, it was kind of cool.
It was kind of cool, actually. They're going to have the racers riding stationary bikes. But those stationary bikes, of course, are going to be feeding all kinds of information. And depending on how many kilowatts these riders are generating, their virtual, version of them will be riding in the race, in the Tour de France. That's kind of cool. We'll talk about that. And do some emails and VMLs. And also, Owen Wilson lied to me. Lied to all of us, really.
Marmaduke, no!
And I'm hurt by it. He is not the skateboarding champ that I thought he was. So we'll get to that, too. All with the help of this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. His voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus. He is an activist and house party enthusiast, and he already knows what he's going to do for dinner here on this Taco Tuesday.
I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. Today's the day. Today is the deadline. Today is your lucky day. You just found a cybersecurity training in your email box. Have you taken it yet? Mm-hmm.
I reached a decision last night, and I don't know if it was the right decision, Andrew. But I kind of decided to maybe just let it ride and see what happens.
That'll make some good show content. Is that a bad idea? I mean, I did mine. So
of course you did yours, because, and this is not fair to you. I feel bad about this. Not so bad that I'm going to take any concrete action to change it. But the job stuff that you do for our show requires you to have full access to the world of American public media. VPN, Itasca. Isn't there something called Kodi now?
Yeah, yeah. Forget about Itasca. Itasca is yesterday's news, Luke. We're a Kodi family.
Agent Kodi Banks. Mm-hmm. Like, if I don't do the cybersecurity training by... Would it be 10 p.m. tonight? Because that would be midnight in the Midwest. If I don't do the cybersecurity by 10 p.m. tonight, I will not be allowed to access a system called Kodi that I would have no idea how to access anyway.
Yeah.
Like, what's the real downside for me other than maybe being in trouble with our bosses? But, I mean, I don't know. Are they going to be tracking these things? Like, if it just goes, like, for instance, and you love to... You love to roast me publicly for this, and that's probably fair.
Hmm?
But this computer that I have sitting here next to me that is belongs to the company we work for, it is something called a Lenovo ThinkPad. It is apparently running a no longer authorized version of Windows. I think that's because these computers that we use that are issued by our company... They have all kinds of rules and regulations on them, you know what I mean? And they are supposed to, for good device health, as we would call it, if I were doing a cybersecurity training video of my own, for proper device health, these things are supposed to be connected to the system, the mainframe, and constantly getting updated and vetted for viruses. And like, and so you have to change your password every, like, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months, just to get into the computer. Well, this thing that I have is so far off their grid. I haven't changed the password for 2 years. Many of the keys have literally come undone from the keyboard. And there's persistently a pop-up that says I'm no longer running an authorized version of Windows. But I never have to change the password. This is great. This is good news. This computer I'm using, it's been liberated from the tyranny of the IT department. And maybe I too will be liberated from the tyranny of the IT department, Andrew, if I don't do the cybersecurity thing.
I don't know exactly what I mean by this, but there is something Star Warsy about your computer. I was thinking that when we were working together during the TBTL-a-thon, sure. Like, yeah, seeing it that there's this one button that pops off, or maybe two buttons that pop off when you try to use it. It reminds me of like a droid that is just on its last legs, but everybody still kind of loves it. You know, like, you know how Star Wars has grimy. That beat up quality to it. Yeah,
yeah, now, which I absolutely love, by the way, from an aesthetic standpoint.
Now, a much less interesting answer to your question is what will happen is our bosses are tracking it only to the point where there are all these automatic systems in place where they keep getting pinged. I mean, last week we were reminded by our direct supervisor, she sent an email to you and me. I don't know if there are other people on that list or not. She was practicing good cybersecurity by not making her list public, I assume. But, you know, we saw that she got a note from some sort of a computer somewhere that is tracking us, saying at least two of your employees have not completed their cybersecurity. So she sent out a note. Again, I don't know if that was to just us or to the entire team or who it was to, but I do believe that there is a system in place that will keep on pinging her, just like if you have an account balance issue with the with the financial software, alarms will continue to rattle around the company that will eventually trickle down to you, I imagine. So it's a matter of how much patience everybody has with this situation, I would say.
That's honestly the only reason that I will probably end up doing it is just so that our boss doesn't get those emails. I mean, I had this last night. I was feeling very I was feeling rebellious, and I was, you know, I had gotten the blueprints for the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
I knew exactly the air vent that I should try to shoot my missile down because, you know, I'd been shooting Womp Rats for years, training for this very moment. If I say one more word about Star Wars, I'm going to definitely start saying some stuff that makes no sense. I probably already did, and our Star Wars heads in the audience are going to get so mad at me. But I was feeling last night very like, maybe I should just test this and just see, because there's a small chance maybe that once I break through, like I could break on through to the other side. Like maybe those auto-generated things will stop going out because they think me not being able to access the system is punishment enough. Like, because the, I mean, that's the big punishment is I will no longer have access to certain things. Of course, all they have to do is tell me you can't file your time card, and I will get that thing. I will get that training figured out and filled out right away.
Turns
yesterdoodle.
Out there is a carrot.
It's called the carrots I need to buy at the end of the week, and I need to get paid
for your vegetarian carrot stew. A couple of points
actually,
on this.
Sound bad.
This is definitely the same exact. The same. I mean, maybe they tweaked one slide somewhere just so they could charge the company another $400,000 to implement this. But that's a number I made up. The number gets higher in my head as I'm doing the cybersecurity training, and I'm getting angrier and angrier that I'm taking it. The number keeps going up in my head. But one thing is, it is a real trip when you hear this in the wild again.
Lucky day. It's your lucky day.
Like, just being in the middle of it and not ready for it and just taking the cybersecurity thing and then just hearing this thing that we've played on the show so many times.
It's your lucky day.
Is a bit of a trip. Like hearing the theme song to your talk show. Over the loudspeakers at the grocery store in the wild. You know, you're like, what? Where am I? What am I supposed to be doing?
Did that happen to you with the Andrew Walsh show?
No, because I had a pretty obscure, weird, fluty hip-hop. It was a I actually tracked this down recently because I had forgotten. Let me see if I can get the name of it. It was a hip-hop instrumental song with a lot of flute in it. Andrew Walsh show. Let me see if I can call
it. It reminded me a little bit of the whatever that As It Happens, that CBC show.
I can see that. Yep.
It's got some jazzy flute happening as well.
Boy, it's amazing. I actually tracked this down. I was trying to tell somebody about it, and I tried to track it down, and then I emailed it to myself so I would never forget again, and now I cannot find it. So anyway, I'll have to... I know. It's weird because I'm very organized. You know,
right, and that's a big part of you and I both. I mean, part of why you want to get your own radio show is just so you can pick the theme music. I mean, honestly, that's like 50% of the appeal. Like, I remember, being on the producer side and thinking, gosh, if I ever had my own show, I knew exactly the music I would end every hour with. And it was Words by Doves, which has the prophecy was foretold. And the use of Catch My Disease by Ben Lee that we have used at the beginning of this show for now 3,195 events, that was, of course, a song that Jen picked. And I think – and I liked it immediately, although I think part of it was I had gotten my way with the show being called Too Beautiful to Live. And so I knew I'd used up some sort of negotiating capital on that. And so when I wanted to give Jen the W on the song, but then it helped that I liked the song.
This is really driving me crazy. If you don't mind, what we're going to do is I'm going to get too distracted if I keep. I actually just pulled out a hard drive, and I'm like, this is not the right thing to do on the air right now.
Did you go to the Fred Armisen closet of Jurassic technology?
What I think I'm going to do, though, is I'll find it during the break, because I know I've got on one of these drives somewhere.
Well, why don't we bump
and
in?
And then we can bump in with it, and I'll give everybody chills. Or we can just come back with, because I do know that I have the archive of all of the shows I did. I was archiving stuff a couple of weekends ago, so I do have the entire Walsh Show archive. We could just come back from the break, hit play on one of these shows that I recorded in 2014. 2014? Is that when I was doing the show? 2013, maybe? And just listen to my takes on, I don't know, gun violence in the state of Washington. Does that sound fun for everybody?
Absolutely. No, I'd be into that.
One other thing I want to ask you about the cybersecurity, although this is a dangerous place to take it, and it's weird that we are out of that realm and I'm pulling us back in. But real question time could get us in trouble. So answer as you see fit or comfortable answering. I'd like to go up the chain of command of the people that we know and work with and work for. How high up do you think the security training goes? In other words, our direct boss, who's a very important person, by the way, and there was a kind of a reshuffling a year ago, and so she's mm-hmm. pretty high up there with power. Do you think that she has to take the cybersecurity training?
Our direct supervisor?
Direct supervisor.
Yes.
Do you think, and I believe she answers to a man who's become famous on the show since he sent a letter to our listeners, David Kansas. Do you think that he takes the cybersecurity training?
I don't think so.
You don't think so. So there is a level, because it reminds me of that time. I mean, speaking of the Andrew Walsh show, and you're trying to like, just kind of like ride this out or just call the company's bluff and just see what happens if you don't do it. I remember that thrill that I got when I went from being a producer to a host, and this is not the way it should work, by the way, but I went from being a producer to a host on Cairo Radio, and it was that first, like, I think, you know, two-week cycle, and I thought, huh, now that I'm a host, do I have to fill out my timesheet? Because I know the other hosts around here probably don't fill out their timesheets, and I never really felt like a host, right? I was always a producer who accidentally had a show, and so I was like, now, but do I get this perk? Can I just, like, let this ride? And I let it ride. And I didn't get any email from the system saying you haven't filled out your card. And I got paid that week, and it was a rush, Luke. And I hope the same for you here and now.
Well, I'm making my to-do list. You know, I keep an email draft that says to-do, and I update it every single day of the things I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have added cybersecurity training to the to-do list.
Oh, you've already buckled.
I already did.
I think it's smart.
You know what? Honestly, I'll just like put on my Oscar Peterson Trio Pandora station, and fix myself a little something to eat, and then just stare off into the middle distance while I live the Groundhog Day that is our cybersecurity training. And then what, an hour and a half later, it'll be over?
Yeah, supposedly. I wasn't timing it because I honestly wasn't. And I don't mind saying this. I also realize that I don't know how much of me bringing this up and drilling down on it has put you in a tough position, because now, of course, all of this could potentially be heard by our colleagues and bosses. Nah. But
no likelihood of that.
I don't mind anybody who knows this. I had the volume turned down for most of the slides this time. Every now and then I would turn it back up, but I was watching MSNBC on one computer and just turned down the sound and was just like mindlessly clicking the other one. That didn't work for everything, because I did hear, no joke, I did hear the It's Your Lucky Day piece of tape, and it kind of freaked me out. But you do not have to pay attention, because we've taken it three times now, or this is the third time. I got 100% on my final exam. It sounds like I'm bragging, because I am. I am a mm-hmm. cybersecurity expert, but I got 100% on the final test. You do not have to have the volume up to do this training or really pay attention to it.
Maybe what I'll do is, I'm obsessed with this HGTV show, Building Off the Grid.
Mm.
Sorry, it's not an HGTV show. I think it's like a maybe Discovery Channel show, but I love it. But it's not, you know, I don't have to be like I don't have to be watching it super closely. It's kind of good background sound. So, and it's about an hour per episode, so I could put one of those on, someone who's building a cabin somewhere in the Sawtooth Mountains, and there's no, you know, running water or electricity, and they've got to figure out how to make it all work. Could just be watching that with one eye, and then just kind of clicking through this extremely tedious cybersecurity mm-hmm. thing on the other computer. So, yeah, I mean, look, with everything going on in the world, I am a very, very, very privileged person, and this is not a big deal. So I can just get through it. But there is something that just feels – I mean, what we could really do, Andrew, if you want to take your previous line of questioning, and if we want to really – if we want to actually speak some truth to some power at our company, do I email Dave Kansas and ask him if he takes it? Like in a nice way. We've been – because, you know, with the layoffs and just with all, everything mm-hmm. going on with the pandemic, we've actually had meetings, like group meetings, where – Dave Kansas shows up, you know, virtually because there's a lot going on. So, and it seems extremely smart and nice. And he's always like, hey, you know, reach out if you need anything. I mean, that's a thing I've heard him say. Well, do I take him up on that?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, it might also be a good time to not get in people's grills over stuff like that. I mean, there's maybe an argument for that as well.
No, but I mean, I would not ask it in like a, is there a way for me to compose the email so it doesn't in any way point him back to this episode of the show, or really any episodes of our show?
It does.
Is there, or can we get the person we thought was a bot to do it? Just, you know, launder the question through Or do we just create a new fake person at the company and then reach out to Dave Kansas in a kind of curious way? Like maybe we, oh, this is what we do. Got it. Ocean's 14.
Okay.
R.I.P. Carl Reiner. Ocean's 14. I need some cool, like, some cool, you know, caper music that's kind of jazzy, like some John, who's that? John Lurie? Does all of the kind of cool. Isn't Jonathan Lurie do a lot of the, like, did he do the Get Shorty?
I think John Lurie, you're thinking of the guy who does weird music for those, for like Fishing with John. And he was the guy behind Fishing with John, the actor slash weird jazz musician. I think you're thinking of somebody else, right?
I'm thinking of, no, John Lurie, the intro to Get Shorty. Not like, really. Like this is, I'll just play you. This is something called Stink by John Lurie, and it's off the Get Shorty soundtrack. Remember this song being a thing?
I reckon. So this is the John Lurie who's like the Jim Jarmusch guy, or Jarmusch,
probably.
However you say it. Oh, that's interesting, because I had the Fishing with John soundtrack, and it's very, like, kind of more experimental and weird, because, you know, this guy's a real weirdo. He became a recluse.
Huh. This, I was obsessed with this particular song. Okay, so Ocean's 14. We create a fictional employee at our company who is in charge of checking up on if people did their cybersecurity training.
Mm-hmm.
And then our high-up boss gets an email from this fictional character we have created inquiring if they've had a chance to finish the cybersecurity training. Then our boss responds that either with, oh, yes, I did. I wonder why it's not in the system, in which case we know that he is responsible to do these things. Or he says, do you know who you're talking to? In which case, he probably doesn't have to do it. And then we've got some information there, too.
I want to wear a wig. I've been rewatching The Americans, and this is such an Americans plot. In fact, it's very close to one of the things. I mean, the way that the Russian spies who are really well. I mean, you never watched The Americans, did you, Luke?
I couldn't get into it. Like, Paul Tompkins was tweeting about it a bunch, and I, you know, I'm a big fan of his, and I like the stuff he likes. And so I was like, okay, I gotta get into this. It was literally at the end of the series, right, when everyone was talking about it. So I started at episode one. I was all excited. I think I watched maybe the first three or four. It didn't quite work for me.
Mm.
But anyway.
Anyway, yeah, but this sounds like very much like an American. Like, you get access to the FBI by posing as somebody who's, like, investigating internally, like that you're on the FBI's side, but you need to make sure that everybody's, like, you know, keeping everything zipped up. It's actually a great plot. It's a great idea by you.
Does the cybersecurity training say anything about creating fake email accounts to actually fish your boss about the cybersecurity training? Is that something that they frown upon?
They say you're supposed to do it.
Oh, well, you know what? That was it, Andrew. It was a test, and we finally passed.
Yes, congratulations.
This whole thing, that's, you know what's going to happen? We're going to create this other account. We're going to email our superior, and then he's going to say, congratulations, you did it. You cracked the code.
Congratulations, it's your lucky day.
About. Yeah, it's your lucky day. You just figured out that this whole thing was a test to see who would figure out how to fuse the music of John Lurie with the caperish plans of a Steven Soderbergh-esque film and catfish their own boss. And then I think we get $1 million. Does the balloons come down from the ceiling?
Of course. I got 100% on the test, and I believe that, yeah, a balloon comes down, but you get a full $1 million. Mm. It's a big balloon, though. It's huge.
It's sad that I would actually, if at the end of doing it, it did do some kind of cool digital thing where it, like, dropped confetti and was like, good job, you did it. I would like that. That would inspire me to want to do this test.
I'll be honest with you. I did expect a certificate. I expected a digital certificate, yeah. But I just got to a final slide that's like, I did take a screen cap of it that says I got 100%. Maybe I should, oh, you know what? I already emptied my recycle bin today. I'm sure you do not do this, but I have a real problem with emptying my recycle bin too soon. I don't like seeing that there's stuff in there.
Oh, I have the opposite.
There. You let it linger. You're creating a garbage stew. Yeah.
There is something going on, by the way, psychologically for you about garbage, digital garbage.
You're actually right.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Because my fear about hitting empty trash is then it's empty. That stuff is gone. And I sit here all day recording things, you know, for this show and for Livewire and even TV stuff, and it all goes on the same little SD card. And I have the opposite. Deep paranoia. In fact, today, this morning, Andrew, I deleted this whole SD card because it was getting full. Now I'm back to having 59 hours of recording time.
Nice.
But there was hundreds of files in there. And what happens if CBS says, "Oh, hey, do you have that? Do you have the vocal recording, your voice recording from that chat you did with so and so? And if it was on there, now it's gone forever." Mm-hmm. And that stresses me out. That makes me more stressed out than the idea of having a bunch of stuff residing in my trash.
Oh no. Sorry. I found it.
Did you really?
I did. It wasn't even on an old hard drive. It was actually the easiest thing to do is it was just sitting on my hard drive on my computer, and I just clicked it to see if it actually existed, and I did not expect it to play. So that was just a little taste of what we'll be coming back with.
Consider your whistles whetted.
Hey, I'm awake now. Wow. How far into the show? 26
minutes. You know
what's minutes.
Funny? I wonder if with no context, I would have been able to identify that with just that one sound. Because now that I know, because I know what you were looking for and I know what it is, it completely brought the whole thing back for me. But I wonder if with no context, if you would have just said this morning to me, apropos of nothing, hey, listen to this. What is that? I wonder, because there are some songs that it's just you literally need like one note of the song and you just know it for whatever reason. It's that memorable.
Right.
Okay, let's do that. Let's take a quick break. I mean, we don't really have to take the break because the break was mostly so you could find the song, but bonk, we know that you found it.
Mm-hmm.
But we should still probably take a break and maybe play a couple ads here. So we'll do that and then be back with much more TBTL in a moment. Isn't this where you start to go into your spiel?
I think you got to wait for the flute to begin.
I might have shortened that too.
I don't know if I let that all play out. I might have had a shortened version where that flute comes in a little bit sooner. It's called the Golden Trumpet.
Did you have
trumpet,
in your mind, though?
By the way,
did
that's
you have
the name
a little?
Song.
Oh, okay. Did you have a little like rhythm with this where you would always kind of instinctively wait for the flute to hit and then start talking?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to. I mean, that's where, I don't know if that's technically a beat dropping, but I don't think that you can really come in before that flute, right? I mean, could you?
I was actually, there are two shows that I'm very jealous of their intro music. One is our friend Aaron Roden, who his show Air Raid, he took a Dinosaur Jr. song, and then he kind of chopped and screwed it a little bit so that it was just the sort of guitar part. And it's really good. Really, really good. And I've always been jealous of that. I've told him that. He even was nice enough to offer it to... He said, well, because he's... Now he does, you know, You Blew It and some stuff with the Stack of Dimes folks. So he was like, well, if you want to use it, you can. I think that's what he said. I could be misremembering. But, you know, I just feel like that would be kind of cheap of me. But then I'm also jealous of DFTB picked the speaking. All roads lead back to Cairo Radio between the hours of 7 and 10 p.m., my friend. Because that's, of course, where TBTL started. That's where the Andrew Walsh Show lived. And now I think it's called Cairo Nights. And my brother, up until very recently, was the producer and audio engineer of that show. Now he's in Portland with his girlfriend. Living what appears to be a beautiful life, as I witness it on Instagram. Looks like they're doing great down there. But he picked that song, All Night by, I think it's Big Boy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he bumped in with that a lot on the, when I was filling in, they would use that as bump-in music.
I think it's, no, but I think it's actually the theme song.
Oh, like, you're right, like, it is.
Plays after the news.
Yeah, top of the hour, and, each hour, yeah.
Yeah, or, yeah, and that's, I was like, dang, that's a good idea. That's like the perfect song for a night show.
Absolutely.
Because, first of all, just musically it's great. It's also called All Night.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, I would hear it when I would be in the car, you know, and I would tune in because, I mean, look, peace and love to the folks that host that show. I always really liked hearing my little brother on the radio. Yeah, this song. So I would tune in and this, I'd hear this and I would just be like, man, if I was hosting this show, I would be ready to make some good radio. I wouldn't, but I'd be ready.
Yeah, you'd
to.
Be ready to.
Things would fall apart shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. But.
Right, right. Now, you're good at hosting radio shows. You're very good at, like, drilling down and reading things at the last minute, but then able to, like, you know, kind of suck up all the information and then spit it out in a seamless way. I would watch you do that and think, oh, that's how you do a radio show. And it turns out that not everybody has the Luke Burbank brain.
I don't agree with that, but
I could not do stuff at the last minute. It was a mess. God, I remember some of those. You find yourself in a segment and you're just like, and I also didn't have a co-host in a lot of cases to bounce things off of. Oof. And you're just talking and you're going and you're like, I don't know. I just got to keep talking. This is live. Oh my God. I should have read that thing. What am I doing?
That is the worst feeling. The only way that I was ever able to do TBTL, like in the radio days, was because of Jen and because of and Sean and just all the people there. There was always someone to talk to. So it just became a rolling conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But like the times when I, the very brief times when I hosted live radio and I was the solo host, looking for phone calls as a way to get, you know, some sort of banter going, that is. Maybe at this point now I'm, you know, I don't know, it's like almost 15 years or something. I think I've been the person that they let talk into the microphone. Maybe not quite that long. Maybe now I could kind of do it and it wouldn't just utterly terrify me from the depths of my soul. But it's only recently that like that isn't just the scariest thought to me ever. You're going in, you're doing a radio shift where your job is to just basically fill 3 hours by talking and then just taking phone calls, if you get any, and just keeping the needle moving by yourself. That's a rolling stress dream for me. Speaking of which, I have been having so many stress dreams. And I've now learned how to identify this as a stress dream during the dream and wake myself up. Andrew,
really?
This morning.
That's half lucid dreaming, man.
I know. It just started. Okay. Look, I don't know if we have to cue up our new Joseph Arthur dream music or not, but let me just, if I might, can I bore you all with a quick description of a stress dream I had 2 days ago that I woke myself up from?
No, you cannot bore me with it. You can fascinate me with it.
You look like a dream catcher came to life.
Yes. So the dream, it starts out, I am at like a something that's sort of in between a community center and a bookstore, like a large, maybe like a Powell's Books or something, that, and I am there to host some kind of event, like to be on stage interviewing, let's say, an author, right? Mm-hmm. But I am in this back kind of public area. There's this big open area where there's people are kind of hanging out. There are bookshelves, and then there's this little back kind of area that there's a little bit of a, it's, I don't know, it's kind of a hallway, but it's very public. You could get to it easily. And I am there with Carrie, and we're both sitting on toilets.
Hmm.
It's not a bathroom.
Hmm.
We're just casually talking, she and I, while we're pooping in public.
I see. I did wonder if you were sitting on the toilets just using them as chairs, but not actually doing the deed, but no
nope.
such luck.
I mean, I don't know what she was doing. I didn't check. Mm. I didn't check her work. But I was just, and we're just casually talking, and I remember having this kind of vague feeling of like, which I, to be honest, have a lot when I agree to go do something, moderate something, be in front of people. There's almost always the moment right before it happens that I deeply regret the decision to agree to go do the gig, just because I'm nervous, basically, and that's not a good feeling. So the person who's kind of the liaison, the person that works with whatever this organization, bookstore, community center, theater thing is, they come up to me and they're just kind of like talking to me casually about the event and who's going to, you know, the author and whatever. And I'm kind of, all of a sudden, it occurs to me that I'm on a toilet in public. Like, mm-hmm. It has not occurred to me that this is weird up until this very moment. And now I become deeply embarrassed. And I just want this person to go away and leave me alone so that I can get off of this toilet and get my shit together. But they won't leave. And other people start wandering over. And now people are kind of realizing that I'm back there. So they want to come talk to me about something. And there's just like a growing group of people. And I'm just kind of like trying to look at the person who's the organizer with like kind of doing this wide-eyed thing. Like, hey, could you give me a little privacy? So eventually...
Oh, you say it like that in your dream?
I'm very British in my dream.
Yes.
Eventually, my move is to just pull my pants up. Like, I don't even wipe.
Oh, God.
I can't... Because I want to minimize... I want to just, like, get my pants on and just be standing up like an adult human person and not a non-weirdo. So I just sort of, like, pull my pants up and stand up just so I'm no longer sitting on a toilet in front of people. And then I'm just like, well, I guess I'm going to have to go do this thing. Side note, I hadn't showered, so I'm just like generally a mess. Like, I think I had in my mind that there was a room that I could get ready in with a shower. Like, my plan was I'm going to take a shower and comb my hair and get all ready to go and then go out on stage. But I looked at the person. I say, well, listen, I'll be over there when it's time to start it. Like, just basically, please leave me alone right now. And she says, oh, it started 5 minutes ago.
Mm.
So adding to all of this is that the person is on stage somewhere else in this complex waiting, and it's already 5 minutes past when this was supposed to start. So now I'm going through all these things in my mind where now I'm trying to walk. Oh, by the way, as I walk away from the toilet, Carrie walks over and just casually flushes it for me, which is probably some sort of indication about her way of helping me in the world subtly look like less of an idiot. So I'm now walking through this labyrinth, and I realize that my, like, I look ridiculous. I don't know what's going on in my pants because I couldn't wipe because I was too embarrassed. I have done zero research, by the way. The other plan was, while I was taking the shower and getting ready, was when I was going to compose my thoughts about what I was going to talk to this person about. And so I'm walking, and I finally get to what is, I guess, the lobby of the area where we're going to do the thing. And I realize that I just physically can't move fast. I cannot get my body to move fast enough towards this door to go in and do the thing. Mm-hmm. And that was when I said, oh, this is a dream. Oh, this is what happens in these stress dreams. I just opened my eyes and I was wide awake. And then I had another one this morning. Thankfully, it didn't involve public toilet usage, but it was another one where I was stressing out, trying to get to something, and I couldn't move fast. And I went, oh, you're having that dream. And then I woke myself up again.
Wow. First of all, that's a classic shit or get off the pot dream right there. They have been teaching that in dream school for quite some time. There's probably something that you just need to get done, but you just need to shit and get off the pot. Is that an expression that your family? Well, your family wasn't as coarse as my family, but you know that expression, right? That's not just something that's
right. It means basically, move it or lose it.
Exactly.
But
we would
never have said shit or get off the pot because that would be very fresh talk. But I was familiar with that phrase growing up.
Yeah. And I also had something. Oh, you know, this is me kind of giving you notes about your TBTL performance, which I try to do off the air. But I was really hoping that you could have worked, like, because you said you didn't wipe, like, you could have worked in a Hello Tushy sponsorship there, like a little bit of, like, sponsored content, the sponsored dream content, which would have been, you know, kind of sweet, good for the listeners, get a little, get us out of a couple of jams. So I was a little disappointed. Yeah. Although you did.
I'm sorry to let you down.
I got a note from the sales, from our contact in the sales department, the person who coordinates and coordinates all of our spots that you hear on the show. Usually once I produce them, you record them, I record them, I mix them, I send them into the sales department. Sally, our colleague over there, usually just says, hey, thanks, you know, or if there's a mistake, maybe saying, hey, I think you pronounced this wrong or whatever. This time she did comment on your Hello Tushy spot. She thought that the peanut butter and the shag rug was really something to behold, and she gave it an emoji.
Yeah.
I believe a blushing emoji.
Look, they are sponsoring the show. We do appreciate that. I will tell you, I use that bidet on a regular basis.
We got there. It's absolutely money in the bank right there.
essential now to my, you know, it started as a reaction to the pandemic. I was thinking about that the other day, too, by the way. I was in the store, and I was just thinking, because it's like, you know, there's toilet paper again, and there are masks can be purchased and gloves. And I think most things that were panic bought have kind of refilled and are now pretty accessible. But I was just wandering down an aisle, and I remember I might have been toilet paper, just thinking, oh, wow, that's – remember when we thought there was going to be no toilet paper? Like – I remember when we were all buying too much of a variety of things because we're like, how much more will there be? And now it's all kind of back. That sort of comforted me a little bit, I guess.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking this up. I usually go to one grocery store, and I think certain grocery stores still have their blind spots. Like, for some reason, I still can't get mm-hmm. panko breadcrumbs or hoisin mm-hmm. sauce at my Safeco. Everything else is good. And also, I believe, I'm not positive, but
You do mean Safeway, right?
Oh, would I say Safeco? Yeah.
Just because if you're shopping, that's why. Safeco, notoriously out of hoisin.
No, that is a good point. T-Mobile Park. When I'm going to T-Mobile Park to buy toilet paper and hoisin sauce. No, but I'm going to, maybe I'll make this the show pick today because it's actually kind of interesting. Our grocery store now mostly has what I believe, although I don't know for sure, Mexican toilet paper. All the packages are in Spanish. It's El Gigante, nice. Vogue, Manzanilla, 400 Hojas is one of them, and the other one is Regio Rinde Plus Maxima Duracion.
You must have taken a picture, right?
Yeah, so I'm looking at this picture of the things. They're colorful. They're nice. I will say that the toilet paper itself is not the highest quality toilet paper, but any port in a storm. So there must still mm-hmm. be some sort of like kinks in the supply line, at right. least. Or, but I mean, I'm sure I go to another store and things are like Genevieve got panko breadcrumbs at like Whole Foods or something. So I think different stores might have different blind spots for whatever that's
worth. Yeah, you're probably right. I haven't tried to buy panko breadcrumbs anywhere, so that could be a thing. But it was, you know, Carrie and I were talking about this the other day. It's like in a bizarre way, even though life feels still very abnormal and we're all desperate to return to normalcy, there's a weird, like you adjust pretty fast. And the way that we have to live our life and the wearing of masks and I can't get past the fact that you dislike your mask so much, Andrew, because as somebody like me with generally, if I can say this, low self-esteem, I've said this on the show a bunch of times. I find the mask so comforting because it's just less of my derp face in the world. But you hate masks. I would think you would have the same feeling of me, which is, hey, cool, no one can see my face. That's just less for me to be anxious about.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because I already have a beard. And I want to make – I mean, I don't think anybody's really doubting this, but in case somebody happens to hear that or they're dipping into the show, I'm not an anti-masker. You know, like you say, right. I hate my mask. I do wear it. You know, Genevieve and I went for a very short walk yesterday. We were wearing our masks because I also was – not exactly sure with the new law, the statewide mask law. If you're walking by yourself down the sidewalk, do you have to wear a mask? Does it apply to you if you're keeping it moving? And at first, even after this new law passed a week or two ago, I was like, if I'm by myself walking down the sidewalk, I don't have to wear a mask. But I guess I've rethought that. And it's like, why not? But yeah, I don't like it. I do it, but I do not like it. But maybe it's because my beard is a face hider. Mm-hmm. I don't need the mask.
Yeah. This is the closest I'll ever get to being able to grow a beard.
Yeah, you should get a beard-shaped mask or one that's designed
Ooh,
didn't so
they
it
sell
looks
those,
like...
Didn't they give those away at your favorite grocery store, Safeco?
That's a good point. Yeah, they did have beard night. I actually didn't like. I really hated those hats. It was like beard hat night. You'd put on a hat, but then like I think it was a knit hat or like kind of a beanie style hat, and then you'd put it on, and then like a knitted beard would fall down in front of your face. I didn't like
something
those
like that.
Yeah,
something like that. Hey, I just want to. You know what? No, I was going to say I want to apologize to the Owen Wilson community, but no. I want an apology from the Owen Wilson community.
Oh, my God. That turned
because
fast.
Yesterday on the show, we were talking about Owen Wilson. We're fans of his work, or as I call him, young Dennis Hopper. And I had seen this video on TikTok where Owen Wilson, I thought, just like does a skateboard trick. And it's a really good skateboard trick where he ollies and then he does this blunt side flint nose slide, whatever they call it, goofy footed stale fish down this ramp and lands it. And I was just like, and I even said to you, I was like, of course Owen Wilson's a guy that just has that in his back pocket.
Hmm.
And then, of course, what we found out right after the show hit the internet was that is not Owen Wilson. I mean, it starts out as Owen Wilson, but that's a stunt double. And that was part of some whole thing that Spike Jones was doing. Do you have any more intel on this?
Yeah, let me actually read this note that came. We got several emails about this. This one is from listener Ben. That shot of him doing the blunt side is – no, I'm sorry, blunt slide. Is it blunt side or blunt slide? Have I been mishearing that?
No, I don't know. I mean, okay. I was just reading what the internet told me yesterday, so okay. I'm no expert.
Okay, so I'm going to read directly here. That shot of him doing the blunt slide is totally fake, and he actually switches out with skater Eric Costin right before hitting the rail. Again, I don't know if I'm saying that guy's name right. The show Yeah Right came out when I was in middle school and featured quite a bit of visual trickery mixed with really good skateboarding that had kids arguing about which tricks were real and which ones were fake. Other notable goofs include skateboards and ramps painted green to appear invisible on screen, and a slow motion bit called Skate Tricks. Anyhow, here's a pic of Owen Wilson and Eric Costin in matching costumes for the gag. So they dressed up like each other to pull. And it's Spike Jones. I think you already said that.
Right.
Spike Jones joint, I guess. Do we say Spike joint? Anything that's produced by somebody named Spike, I call a joint.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Who are the other great Spikes of the world? Because we've got Spike Lee, mm-hmm. Spike Jones. There was a guy named Spike who was the sidekick on the KISW show, the Bob Rivers show. His sidekick was named Spike. And then he had a band called Spike and the Impalers that used to play like casinos. They were kind of a big deal, I think. That's it. Spike Owen was a shortstop for the Seattle Mariners in the 80s.
We had the first pet I ever had, I was very little. I think it was around before I was even born, was a tiny little white sickly poodle whose name was Spike.
Okay. So that's four?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, thank you for the correction, everybody. I now know that Owen Wilson is not just like a professional-level skateboarder. I liked the world more when I thought he could do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just liked that Owen Wilson... Because the only way you can do something like that is to, first of all, be very naturally talented, and second, to invest a ton of time. Like, and a lot of trial and error. And I liked the idea that along with like co-writing Bottle Rocket and being part of this very creative family of Wilsons, that he was also just grinding it out somewhere, just like skateboarding. But I know we need to get to the top stories, and I know that this is going to be something that generates even more emails. But I don't really understand. I don't understand the anti-skateboarding sentiment in a lot of places. Like, I guess maybe there are insurance implications, or if it were if I owned a building and I put up some very nice landscaping and I had some concrete poured and then people were grinding on it all day and it was kind of destroying it, I guess I could see being a little bummed out about that. But just generally speaking, I think skateboarding is so cool. Like, I think it's so good for kids. Like, it's exercise, it's creativity, it's camaraderie. Like, I just think that when I see four or five skater kids in Bellingham just skateboarding around and practicing their tricks, I'm filled with joy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the videos I see on TikTok will be people who are very mad that somebody was skateboarding at like the town library or whatever. And I just kind of think, I don't know. I think it's generally a force for good.
Isn't that literally a t-shirt that skaters used to wear all the time? Like, skating isn't a crime?
Yeah, skateboarding is not a crime. Yeah.
You should
definitely
get one.
How do you do, fellow kids? Get my skateboarding is not a crime t-shirt and go wander around Bellingham on my skateboard. But no, it's just like, again, there are probably some examples of times where it's not good or someone, you know, I don't know. Again, I feel like it's a cool thing that's generally a positive in the lives of the people that are doing it. Again, I was into skateboarding as a kid, so maybe I'm coming at it from a biased position. But again, just on TikTok, there are tons of videos of people trying to like, and it's, you know, it's honestly, it's usually kind of white people of a certain age either lecturing or trying to run and like pull skateboards away from kids who are skateboarding in some public place where they're not supposed to be skateboarding. And I kind of just think to myself, really? Is this the number one priority for your life? Person who's trying to stop 13-year-olds from, you know, being outside and getting fresh air?
Yeah, that's all kind of new to me. I don't really have a take on that because I didn't realize that was still a thing. I mean, I remember being a young person in the 90s. I was not a skater. I had friends who were kind of skaters, is the word. Poser. I mean, I don't think they were posers. They were kids who used to be skaters, then probably stopped skating quite a bit, but kept the look. I don't know if that's a poser or not. But anyway, so
no, probably not.
And so I remember feeling like, oh yeah, people are harassing skateboarders or whatever. But I was a kid then, and I just thought that the world had kind of moved on from that. Because I mean, it does seem like it is more popular now than ever before. Like not just like it used to be. Hey, if you're a skater, then you're going to be gathering with your friends and doing tricks, and you still see that. But I see skating as transportation more than I ever did before. Maybe part of that is being on the West Coast, but I swear I've been seeing it even more in the past 5 years. Just people and a lot more young women I notice on skateboards just getting here and there, at least in my neighborhood.
Totally. And also like a lot of skate parks have been built. You know, most cities, you know, will have a couple of dedicated skate parks, which is really awesome. But the reason I think I see it so much is because cell phones are so ubiquitous. So what's happening now, I mean, this goes for so many things in our world now, where it's just everything's getting filmed. And so I see lots and lots of incidents on, and it must be that if I've lingered on them in TikTok, the algorithm starts to reward me with more examples of whatever it is that I'm watching, you know, all the way through, as opposed to just swiping up for the next video. But I get a fair number of people just, and then a lot of stuff from like basically people, and I'm trying to avoid throwing out the dread Karen term or whatever we call male Karens. Like, I think you and I both, Andrew, are kind of a little bit like, I don't know, that's a complicated, it's an easy thing to do, and it's complicated for a few reasons, but it tends to be like these homeowner association beefs, like people yelling at, I watch a whole genre of TikTok that is people yelling at each other about surveying lines in like suburban America. That's something that I see a lot of now. I also follow a whole subgenre on TikTok of people fixing up old swimming pools at their grandparents' houses that have just been in disrepair. That's a thing that I find endlessly fascinating. Like I have the weirdest For You algorithm now.
That's actually kind of cool. I think I can say this. You know, you mentioned I remember specifically when it was. It was in January because we were doing shows out of St. Paul. And you had mentioned that you were pretty much done with TikTok because what you were being fed was just like a lot of very young women, like high school girls in a lot of cases, doing pretty provocative dances to some, you know, and you're just like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm getting all this stuff, but I'm not super comfortable with just opening my phone and seeing this all the time, especially if I'm just like on an airplane just trying to bide my time. And you sent me one of them to give me an example. And it was kind of funny, like what the song that this girl was dancing to. But I wasn't really using TikTok much. So then I looked at that one and then it fed me another one. And then I realized, oh, now you poisoned my algorithm. Not that I really had one because I hadn't really played around a lot in TikTok, but it took me a while. And then I put it down for a long time. And then recently, in the past several months, I've been flipping through it more. And I had to really do something where I specifically had to like search out other things I didn't even really care about. But like it was a lot of crafty kind of things or life hacky kind of things. I was like, let me just start there. I need to flush out this algorithm where it's just like people who are dancing provocatively because this content is not – I'm not the audience for this content, and it made me feel a little uncomfortable. Right.
Well, I managed to steer mine away. I'm following this guy. I love this dude so much. I think I've mentioned it before on the show, but he's this incredibly mechanically inclined, handy guy. He can fix motorbikes and any kind of automotive thing, he can fix it. I think it's called like Rusty Van Ranch. That's his like handle, and I think he's on Instagram. He's on a bunch of places, but I just see him on TikTok. And he decided to do this competition with his brothers where they were going to each take – there's a certain thing called the – like I forget what the actual name of it is, but you've probably seen it, Andrew. Those like – it's like a plastic tugboat that you actually put sand in. It's a sandbox, right? But it's kind of a plastic tugboat. I think it's part of this kind of line of kids' outdoor toys that are made of very durable plastic, but they're kind of cartoonish.
Okay.
Anyway – his idea was to have a competition between he and his brother, I think maybe both of his brothers, where they were going to try to convert one of these child's sandboxes into an actual floating boat, and they were going to race them. And he got so deep into this thing where he found an old jet ski that's like totally falling apart. So he basically disassembled the jet ski and then had to figure out how to overlay this sandbox onto the jet ski, which involved cutting it in the middle and expanding it greatly and fiberglassing the whole thing. He's calling this project the Tug Ski. And on July 4th, he's going to launch the Tug Ski. I have probably watched 4 hours of him working on this, like in 2-minute increments. And I like seriously get up in the morning. I'm like, I hope he put up another post about the Tug Ski.
That's
like,
awesome.
It gives me life.
And when's he launching it? Did you say the 4th of July?
Yes.
Wow.
And I cannot friggin' wait, Andrew. I am so psyched to see this thing in the water. Like, and he just seems like a really likable dude too. I just really dig this. He's good at everything I'm terrible at. Like watching him fix things and his just mechanical brain and his just like he knows how to fabricate metal. He just does all this stuff. I'm so impressed. I have like a very strong man crush on this guy. So I follow him, which that now steered my algorithm away from seductive dancing teenagers towards like stuff like that. I'm also following a couple people who are like cleaning up or building swimming pools. So that bent my algorithm towards that. So yeah, I've gotten it fairly well dialed in now that it has to do for me with who I'm following. Like I'm not following any seductive child mm-hmm. dancers, so that I'm getting better stuff in my For You page.
If you say seductive child dancers any more times, I'm gonna have to make it the show title, and I really do not want to. So let's just leave that there. Although I did you shout out? Do you know the handle of this guy? Because people might want to follow him now. Did you? Mention
yeah, Rusty. I think it's called Rusty Van.
Oh, you did say Ranch. That. Yes. I'm sorry.
Let me just. No, I'm gonna just Google it because that's what we kind of do. Yeah, Rusty Van Ranch. On TikTok, it's like at Rusty Van Ranch. And again, he's on, he has a YouTube channel. I think his real name might actually be Christopher Jeffrey. Let me click on this. His YouTube page is pretty old. It would appear, but I don't think it's very updated, but his TikTok, I think he's just really active on TikTok and Instagram now,
mm-hmm.
but I would recommend he just seems like it's kind of interesting. I mean, he's a young guy. He lives in New England. He's got a daughter, and he's just, again, he's just a clever, very, very creative, handy guy who I greatly enjoy watching do things that I could never in a million years do. Carl Reiner has passed away at age 98. He was the co-creator of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He collaborated with Sid Caesar for many years. He also collaborated with Mel Brooks. They did this series of comedy records called The 2,000-Year-Old Man, which was – I've always heard about The 2,000-Year-Old Man. I haven't listened to much of it, but the premise basically was that Mel Brooks was a 2,000-year-old man, yeah. And they would just improv these things. Like one of the things I saw mentioned today was like – he was like Beethoven was a great basketball player. Nobody talks about that. Like it's just shit like that. And it's like Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks just going back and forth. Those comedy records – apparently it started – The 2,000-Year-Old Man was a bit that Mel Brooks – and Carl Reiner would do at parties just to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm. And just, I'm sorry, and it's Mel who's doing the actual 2,000-year-old
yeah,
man?
Yeah, Mel is the 2,000-year-old man.
Yeah.
And Carl Reiner's the guy interviewing him. And it would just be kind of Mel Brooks riffing on just history and random shit as a guy who's been alive for 2,000 mm-hmm. years. None of his kids would visit him. He had like thousands of kids and like just shtick like that. And so they would do this 2,000-year-old man bit, like literally just to make people laugh at like a barbecue. And then they recorded it and put it on an album, and they were wildly successful comedy albums. Like they were huge, huge hits. I'm a little young for most of Carl Reiner's work, although he was in the Ocean's 11 movies. I'm probably more familiar with Rob Reiner's work, his son, of course, who was Meathead on the Archie Bunker Show, or I guess All in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, he directed Spinal Tap and I think When Harry Met Sally. And so anyway, I know Rob Reiner's work more than Carl Reiner's work. But what I was always fascinated by was Carl Reiner was very sharp up until very recently. He was 98 when he passed away. And Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks would have dinner together every single night. It was this known thing. There was this one Comedians in Cars where Jerry Seinfeld goes and he picks them up and drives around with them. And like, you get to come back and see what it was like for them. I mean, they're old, right? They're sitting there with like TV dinner trays, kind of like your parents might have. In, I mean, it's a beautiful house in Beverly Hills, but it's like they're just in this one kind of small room. There's somebody there who helps them out, you know, kind of home health person, or maybe helps cook the food for them. And they would just sit in these like recliners next to each other with their eating their dinner off of these TV trays, just watching TV and joking around with each other. They did this like every night for years. And I just found it so charming. I couldn't believe it. So, I mean, it's obviously very sad for Carl Reiner's family. I feel very sad for Mel Brooks right now, honestly.
I was thinking about him, too. You know, I kind of have the same lens on him as well, like kind of seeing the photos of them together. Their friendship has become so big. Why would I even start this sentence? Because I can't think of anybody's name. But all right, bear with me here for a second. Captain Jean-Luc Picard, who plays him.
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart has a similar friendship with Sir. Do you know
Sir Ian McKellen?
Yes. Thank you for bailing me out there. They have it feels like their friendship is bigger than the sum of its parts at this point. I'm sorry that I brought that up, not knowing either one of their names, but I sort of have the same lens. Although I am very regretful about one thing, which is, of course, he directed the Jerk. Because I was trying to figure out what tape we should play today, and I couldn't think of anything that was Carl Reiner related. And of course, we have played the tape from The Jerk so much on this show, and that's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I had forgotten about that connection there. I guess he'd done several movies with Steve Martin, including Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, which I have a vague memory of liking, but don't remember much beyond that.
I was following Carl Reiner on Twitter up until very recently. I mean, I am following, but he was tweeting up until very recently, and his tweets were always funny and kind of weird. Just like June 23rd, he says, 94 years ago when I was 4, I heard someone sing, "Did you ever hear Pete go tweet, tweet, tweet on his piccolo?" To which my answer was no, until I heard it again. This, for me, opened a path to a new work of literary art. More later. This is a thing that Carl Reiner tweeted, like, what, 6 days ago? Like, I mean, that's I picked a very weird random tweet, but it was like his brain was very much working. And I would just see these, like, I would just see these tweet from him. Like, here's a great one. This is June 20th. Just watched Errol Flynn and Olivia de Havilland. And then he follows it up with, would you happen to know Olivia de Havilland's birth date? Which is like,
he's just asking the world that?
I guess. Google it. Maybe he doesn't know about Google.
He knows about Twitter, but not Google.
Yeah, he knows about Twitter, but not Google. Anyway, it's like, I don't know. Just like, he was also, you know, Carl Reiner was very politically savvy and active and very progressive, as his son is. And I was reading this morning in all the memorials for him about a time when basically, I guess it was probably the FBI came to his house to try to figure out if he knew any commies, because he'd been working with people that were, you know, kind of suspected by McCarthy and all of them. And if these guys show up at the door and he says to them something to the effect of coffee. And they said, oh, yeah, absolutely, we'd love some. He goes, no, I was hoping you brought some to these G-men. And then he proceeded to just kind of like play dumb and act like he didn't know, you know, who was you know, actually a communist or whatever. And then they left him alone and they didn't get any names out of him. And he said that was the best acting of his life, was basically, you know, playing dumb over who might be a communist sympathizer. So anyway, R.I.P. Carl Reiner. He was obviously a pretty incredible, pretty prolific legend in entertainment, and was, you know, he went out the way I hope to, tweeting up until your last breath. Speaking of comedians, did you see this, any of this footage circulating, or any of this kind of chatter about Sacha Baron Cohen apparently crashing this far-right rally in Olympia last weekend?
I did. The longest tape I could find was about 8 minutes long, and I did not watch the whole thing. I saw parts of it, and I saw parts of it excerpted in news clips, although the news clips that I saw, it seemed like the news stations were too scared to play much of it. But yeah, I heard a few minutes of it here and there. There are various angles on it.
Yeah, I mean,
when I said I meant literally different angles of cell phone. There's like a lot of different cell phone coverage, not like a lot of ins and outs, although there kind of are some ins and outs here.
So there was this gathering in Olympia on Saturday here in Washington State. That, of course, is the state capital for folks that don't live in Washington. Did you have a period of time when you were a kid, Andrew, where you could name the capitals of all the states? I could do that for a minute, and it was my kind of claim to fame as a, you know, fourth grader.
No, as an adult, I've been struck by that bug several times. I even downloaded an app on my old phone, and I said, I'm not going to delete this app until I have them all memorized, and then I got a new phone. It was a very expensive way of bailing on my responsibilities. Yeah, I'm sure it's for children, but it's like flashcards, basically. but I think you and I should both be able to do that, and I think that we should make it, no joke, a goal for us. I don't know if we can turn it into a bit on the show, but I think we should make it a goal that, like, by the end of this year, we should be able to name the state capital of every state. There's no reason we shouldn't.
If you want to know the difference in this show here in year 11 or 12 or whatever we're on, and at the beginning, we used to do push-up contests. We used to see how many push-ups we could do. Yeah. Now we're just settling on, can we remember things?
Okay, he was in Star Trek, but not the old Star Trek, the new Star Trek, and he's got a best friend. You know who I'm talking about.
So let's do that. I actually really want to do that challenge because, first of all, I think I'm probably still about halfway there. I always had, you know, I remember Vermont would give me trouble. Is Vermont Montpelier?
Montpelier? Yeah, I think so.
Montpelier,
I mean, that's
Vermont,
definitely
a
city there. I guess it is the capital.
I think
now,
that
I should know. I was next door. Concord, of course, is New Hampshire.
Nevada gets some people because they think it's going to be Vegas, but I believe it's Carson City. So Olympia is the state capital of Washington, and they had this get together there this weekend. It was called the March for Our Rights 3, and it was a rally designed to bring together a bunch of far right groups. I mean, this is just a real who's who of bumper stickers that I don't like to see on trucks. when this, I'm reading from a CNN report. There isn't a byline for this, so there's just somebody just writing anonymously for CNN, I guess. The groups included these different groups like the let me see, I have it on this other page here, who all was there. I don't know if it even really matters. This group called the Oath Keepers. The Oath Keepers, if I understand their general thing, it's that a lot of them are like former military, and they feel like they've taken an oath to defend this country. I'm putting this all in the heaviest air quotes I can possibly muster. And that the idea being that at some point they're going to have to keep their oath to keep this country the way they think it should be. And that, of course, means armed resistance. As I like to say, my money's on the real army. Mm-hmm. But anyway, these group called the 3%ers were there, which is the same. They're sort of similar folks. These are just a bunch of people that have guns and think that they're going to take up these arms if they need to. And they like to intimidate people with these guns. And they show up at state capitals or Walmarts. And I find it to be just gross behavior. And again, they're all super tough until the real army shows up. And then they are not going to win because there's not enough of them. Not that I want to see civil war in the streets, but I have a feeling that there's a lot of bluster there and not as much follow through as these people playing, you know, dress up are actually willing to do. Okay, having said all of that, what basically happened was this group that was putting together the March for Our Rights 3, they got a call like a couple weeks ago from some other organization that said basically, hey, we want to put together some entertainment for this March for Our Rights 3, and we're going to actually book some bands, we're going to hire a production company, and we'll pay for the stage and we'll pay for all of it. And so the people putting together this terrible rally were like, cool, that sounds great. And what it appears now is that that organization was actually Sacha Baron Cohen's production company. So they rented all the stuff. they actually booked a real band out of Olympia called the Olsen Brothers Band. That's just like a country music, you know, local country music band, who said they weren't there to be political. They were just excited to be playing in public again. Although to me, to play in public is a political statement, right, in and of itself.
Yeah, I don't know much about them, so I shouldn't delve in. But one of the first videos I saw was posted on their YouTube page. When I saw this was going down, I just wanted to see some raw audio or video. They had about 2.5 minutes of cell phone video of Sacha Baron Cohen doing his thing at the rally, you know, dressed up in heavy makeup, as you'll get to in a moment. But they wrote on the description of their YouTube page, like, we didn't know we were opening for Sacha Baron Cohen here, but apparently we were. There was something, I mean, as much as you can glean from a band based on a one sentence description on YouTube, it didn't put me off necessarily. They didn't seem to be there to be raising a huge stink. Although I will say that if TBTL was invited to perform at that rally, which I don't think we were, I should probably talk with the folks at APM to see if we didn't get that invite, but I would probably turn it down, because you are kind of aligning yourself with that festival or whatever it was.
I think that this Olsen Brothers Band, in a weird way, that they're kind of, I don't want to say trying to use the moment, but they're in a weird spot where if you're a band and you're getting attention, it's a good thing generally. I don't think anyone really is mad at them, because I think they have enough plausible deniability. So yeah, it's kind of the thing, like you're right, like their video of it is one of the like main videos out there. Luke Olsen, who's in the band, is doing interviews with CNN. Hmm. Here's what he said about it. So basically, they get up there and they play some kind of probably straightforward country music. And then this band comes up after them, which is this guy in like overalls and a beard and a hat. And that guy is very likely Sacha Baron Cohen, who's singing a song that's like super racist. He's calling it the Wuhan flu. He's saying, inject Obama with the Wuhan flu. He's trying to get everybody to sing along. Here's what the Luke Olsen from the Olsen Brothers Band said. He said that the stunt seemed to anger some individuals in the crowd. People started to get pissed because I think he made a lot of them look stupid because they were singing along at first.
Mm-hmm.
But as he took it further, the crowd started to get pissed, and then he just jetted out and hopped in an ambulance in the back. And there was an angry mob chasing him and trying to stop the ambulance from leaving. I mean, basically it sounds like, so Sacha Baron Cohen, if it is him, and I've listened to the tape, and it definitely sounds like him. One of the things I'll say is I like, actually really as a person, as a human being, like when I hear Sacha Baron Cohen interviewed, I find him always to be very entertaining and very thoughtful. And I, you know, I feel like he's generally, well, his politics and mine probably align a lot. I don't know where he stands on some of the stuff in Israel, but, and I don't know if it really matters, but I would say as far as like his lens on like the far right movement in America, he and I are probably very similar in our thoughts on that. So I like the idea of him showing up places and kind of roasting these people. I do feel a little bit like he already did this bit when he was on Borat, though, when he was Borat, right? Throw the Jew down the well so my country can be free.
Forgot about that. Yeah. I you know, I'm with you. Like, I think that he, it's my guess is on the what I would consider to be the right side of issues. I don't really go for this kind of thing. I mean, this is, we don't have to spend a lot of time with my opinion on it, because it's obvious if you've listened to the show at all.
You don't like pranks.
I just don't like pranks in that way. And even if he is using this as a platform to get his message across, if that's the right way of putting it, he's also doing it, I think, for profit, for his production company, and I don't know, for mostly, not this particular prank, by the way. I just mean in general, when you're talking about the Borat stuff, and I'm not really into this kind of entertainment or whatever you would call it.
I do find it really funny, like when he was when he did that movie Bruno, and he got like Paula Abdul to do an interview where she was sitting on someone who was a human bench as she was there to try to promote her sort of like nonprofit that was supposed to be, you know, obviously about like helping people. Like, I feel like he does have a pretty keen eye for pointing out hypocrisy, and also for like doing things that are genuinely scary to do. Like, so I just listened to, I think it was an old interview he did on the Howard Stern show, but he was just talking about like, you know, all of the lengths that he goes to actually try to stay physically safe when he's doing these things. So for instance, them having the ambulance on standby is kind of genius.
Yeah.
So he had this huge security detail, And I guess once people started to realize how kind of crazy these songs that he was singing were, even the three percenters, even these, like, I would say kind of terrible people that want to just go around toting their guns, even they were like, this is too much.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to unplug the microphone or unplug the power to the stage, but his security team was guarding the power source. And they finally eventually got to the mic and unplugged it. That's how the whole thing finally stopped. And then at that point, he runs and jumps in the ambulance and his security detail jumps in and then they just book it out of there. Like, that's all stuff that he very much had to plan going in, because it's like, you know, the Boogaloo guys were there. Those Boogaloo guys are like really, you know, bad news. They're the kind of like, they're the latest wave of these people that are violent, very often associated with white, with openly white supremacist groups. They're armed. They wear Hawaiian shirts. It's some in joke. They're sort of like, you know, they're like an outgrowth of this kind of Reddit world of like memification of things and inside jokes, you know, layered on inside jokes. But they're packing guns and they have, I think, very dangerous beliefs. So those guys were there too. So basically, like, Sacha Baron Cohen, if it is him, is going in doing this thing, but then he also has to think about his exit strategy, because those people, I would not want to tick off however many hundred possibly mentally ill people who are holding guns.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that they had people, his security team guarding the power supply. Think about them. That's not a security detail that I would want. That's like going right.
I want hazard pay.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, generally speaking, I think I'm on board with what he's doing. You know what I mean? I'm not necessarily against it, but I just it makes me cringe. It's not something that I kind of sort of seek out. Yeah, it was. I don't want to get into people's hearts and minds, but in the videos that I saw, you had some people simultaneously, like a big part of the crowd seemed to be chanting along and doing the call and response and saying the awful things in this song. But at the same time, you saw that there were other people in the crowd that early on knew that they were being trolled. Now, I don't know if the concern was, hey, these aren't our beliefs. And this guy is, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the things that he's saying behind closed doors, these folks would say. And again, maybe I shouldn't make that presumption, but here I am making it. I think it's that we live in a world where people are now, you know, even in this world, they're realizing, wait a second, we have to be careful because the things are going to be manipulated, or we're going to be set up, we're going to be punked, we're going to be pranked, whatever you call it. And I think that people everywhere are attuned to this. And that's why people, there was a guy with a megaphone saying, shut it down, shut it down. I saw like a scan of the crowd. I don't know if it was from the country western band, where it was almost everybody was into it and waving flags and singing along. But there's one guy like giving vehemently thumbs down, shut it down, shut it down. And my guess is that guy knew early on, like, again, I don't know what's in that guy's heart, but I think what was in his brain was, we're being punked here, idiots. Like, we need to make sure that we are not with this guy.
Yeah, my guess, I'm happy to speculate on the hearts and minds of the people who voluntarily attended that rally.
Yes.
And I'm more than sure that they all would have no problem referring to it as the Wuhan flu.
Yes.
And I am more than sure that it was not that what this Sacha Baron Cohen in disguise character was singing was offensive to them. It's that they realized that the joke was on them and that was offensive to them.
Yes.
The people that were pushing back on it, I would be very, very confident in saying that. The organizer of the event put out a video that said, we got catfished. I mean, that's not actually how catfishing works, generally speaking. But the thing I would say, though, is my comedy brain says you got to come up with a new bit, because you already did this bit on Borat where you show up and you get people to sing along with something that's reprehensible. The other problem I have is that Sacha Baron Cohen, who is a much better actor than I am, is British and does not have a convincing American or Southern accent.
Yes,
and
what
when he's
was
singing
that
in this character, it sounds like. It actually sounds like more like somebody who's actually from Israel, like the kind of accent that you might have if you were born in Israel and you spoke English, but you also spoke Hebrew, I guess. Like, it's not the biggest problem with the bit is I don't think his accent is convincing enough.
It's very weird. I'm terrible with accents, but I was wondering, is he doing an Eastern European thing? Are we going to play any of this tape, or are we not because of the content?
I don't think we have to play it. I don't even think it's. it's that it's like so offensive. It's just like the audio is kind of bad, and I think people can kind of like they can if they saw Borat, I think that they can piece together what was happening. He was doing something like that, but just in a different outfit.
Yeah, and the outfit itself was very over the top, and I mean maybe that's because right. he's doing it for a TV show, but like. If you really wanted to prank these people, you would look much more modern. You would look like a more modern racist. But he
exactly.
looks like an,
you would look.
He looks like Elmer Fudd like or something,
or like something like he looks like one of the animatronic characters from like the Country Jam band.
Yeah.
At like a Showbiz Pizza or sorry, like at Disneyland, where there's like he doesn't he looks ridiculous and over the top, which he probably had to do so they wouldn't figure out that he was. I don't know, though. I mean, do you really think that the people at this gathering would have been that – because you're right. Would they have been that aware of what Sacha Baron Cohen looks like? Because you're right. If he really wants to be like more – if he wanted to pull it off more convincingly, he would basically just look like a Kenny Chesney type.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody – one of these kind of like the new version of country music singers where that's like they wear baseball hats.
And then turn up the heat slowly on your lyrics and – Right.
Right.
Yeah, sorry.
Like he could have had like frosted tips and like, you know, kind of like those fancy pocket jeans, I call them, where you like jeans that have like way too much going on. And like there's a certain look to the modern country, male country singer. And he was going nowhere near that. He looked like a cartoon from a Disney movie.
Which is maybe, you know, and again, I don't know how much of this is me missing the point. I mean, maybe that is the point. And you know, when it's finally produced for his TV show, which we're all assuming, by the way, they haven't, unless you've seen something in the past hour or two. Like, I don't think that the production company is actually returning any requests on this, but I think it's pretty clear where this is going to end up or where it was supposed to end up. And so, you know, maybe I'm missing the point a little bit and that's why it's going to be funny in the context of the show is because, you know, the point is look how clownish. I didn't even have to punk him like with a more scary, realistic looking modern version of somebody who's going to be leading us on a racist chant. But I don't know. Yeah. But the accent itself, to go back to that, I had no idea what he was doing. I thought I was missing kind of an inside joke.
No, I think that was Sacha Baron Cohen trying to do his best impression of a kind of a hillbilly from the States. And it was not. It was not particularly convincing.
My favorite role of his, and again, I'm not well versed, but I thought he was the best part of Talladega Nights. That's the movie. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the race car movie. I love it. He plays like a French guy in there who's just like really cool and aloof and just drives Ricky Bobby crazy, right? Like, I'm sure that's the most boring description of that character, but that I find to be delightful. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
How are things going in the email vmail dept?
Dept. Pretty good. I have a question for you, though.
Abbreviate department that way, just save everybody time.
I just heard something while you were trying to play the music. It sounded like listeners won't hear it because I'll clean it up, but it sounds like you were trying to click on it on your audio a whole bunch before it finally played. And I'm taking, if I'm right about this, I'm taking a bit of comfort in that because I feel like I don't use iTunes anymore, but I have an iTunes style player. And quite often, like when I went to play that It's Your Lucky Day tape before on the fly, I clicked it in slightly the wrong place. And instead of playing, it just went into like, oh, you want to rename this file? And I'm like, no, I don't want to rename it. I want to play something on the fly. Does that still happen to you? And if not, can you say yes to give me comfort?
I wish. Andrew, I respect you enough to not lie to you. What happened was I clicked on it and I had muted.
Yeah.
I had muted my computer like on the keyboard because of something else I was doing where I wanted to make sure I didn't start auto-playing things. Mm-hmm. And so what you heard was me clicking the file, not having any audio, and then realizing, oh, I've got to unmute this computer. So then stopping, unmuting the computer, and doing it over again. Okay. It was not a lag in the system. I will actually say this Farrago thing that I use, what's not great about it is it's still not searchable. But there's zero latency with it.
Mm-hmm.
I give it high marks, other than the fact that I can't search for things.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Okay. I had some.
Do you want me to tell you about something else that we were wrong about?
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
Were you going to read Fred's email about scorecards?
Yes. Yes. I was going to read it, but you go ahead if you have it in front of you.
Yeah. We were. I feel like this one's on me because I was the one that brought up the score. I've really focused on the scorecard element of that peanut story from the New York Times last week. And I was saying how, you know, I thought that the catchphrase of the guy who basically popularized peanuts at baseball games and also made the first scorecards, I thought his catchphrase of without a scorecard, you don't know how to tell the players apart, I thought that was so silly. And now I feel silly because Fred checked in to say, back in the day, probably less than 50 years ago, most baseball uniforms did not have players' names on the back. So you did indeed need a scorecard in order to identify baseball players. Of course, no doi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't even think of that. But, like, it was a very different world back in those days. And I think it was, you know, nowadays, I think the Yankees famously still don't have names on their jerseys, right?
Yes, and also, and Fred says that, so scorecards actually were printed with the names of both the mm-hmm. home team and the visiting team rosters, because you and I thought they were talking about scorecards like the kind where you fill it out yourself. You just have a big blank book full of them, and you fill it out based on who's playing. But these that had the advertising baked into them were pre-printed, which actually sounds pretty great. I wish they'd do that, go back to that.
And if you think about it, back in those days, there was no social media. There was no, like, it would be very possible that when a team came to your town and they were playing against your home team, you had never seen, like, if it's 1953 or whatever, you've never seen the players on the other team. You might have heard of them. Maybe if they have Jackie Robinson on their team mm-hmm. or somebody really famous, you kind of know who that is. But it wasn't like today where, you know, when we go back to normal life where just the internet gives you complete access to the look, the face of every single player on every single team. You didn't really have that. So it would be actually very kind of confusing world. No one has names on the back of their jersey, and you've never even seen the other team or any representation of them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I have some other emails that I want to definitely get to today, so I don't want to waste our time. But I do want to say, speaking of emails, an email just came in actually to my Gmail account. It's a Google News alert for Andrew Walsh. As I've mentioned on the show before, I like to keep a Google News alert on my own name just in case I do something famous and I don't know about it. And so far, I haven't done anything famous, which is not really how words work. But I did get this headline, UBS rolls out ESG-focused global corporate bond ETF. And here's the quote mm-hmm. from me. UBS AM head of UBS passive and ETF specialist sales for the UK and Ireland, Andrew Walsh, said, "We have seen how ESG ETFs outperform their standard, quote-unquote standard peers during the volatility caused by the coronavirus pandemic, and investors are increasingly demanding sustainability aspects to their products."
I remember when you said that.
Yeah, do you remember? Was that on yesterday's show? Or I think Famdemore pulled that, right? And isolated it for you?
Yeah. I think it was Friday, maybe.
Might have been
Friday. We like to get a little loose on Fridays.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
You know.
Okay, here is something I really do want to read to you. This is from our friend Heidi in Minnesota. And it's not about our conversation about Latin yesterday, honestly. This is about the color pink and the gendered aspects of that in our society. And we were talking about the those quote-unquote portable urinals. They're the boxes that you pee in, yeah, and then the pee turns to gel and you can just throw it away. And one of them was pink for women or girls, but there was no like functionality or structural difference between the ones for boys and the ones for girls. Only one was pink. And you had asked, you know, is that pink thing an issue? And I had talked about it from a kind of economic standpoint, that this pink washing, one of the big complaints is often that you can have two products side by side, one that's either male or just generally unisex, and then the same exact product that's pink, and the pink one is more expensive. And it's just kind of like, yeah, because girls like pink. And that is a problem. But I also do know that the issues of just like kind of a very gendered culture and the idea of pink is for girls or dolls are for girls. Like, I know it's more insidious than that, and I kind of didn't want to get into it because I'm not very articulate on these things. And I thought Heidi wrote this thing about the color pink and the gendered nature of it. I think this is a really, really interesting email. So that's a long setup. Here's what Heidi says. I don't know if this is something you want to go back to, but I just want to point out what I think is a real argument against this pink kind of thing. Anytime a company puts out a product for women that is pink, it makes all the little kids of the world learn that pink is for girls. Kids may not pay attention to this specific product, but it all adds up and creates the expectation. This is top of mind for me right now, since the other day we were outside with a neighbor kid who is 6 years old, like my son. And I brought out some kind of snack that required a fork, and my son's fork was pink, because we have this kid's silverware that has different colored handles, and the prongs are metal, and they have pink handles. The neighbor happened to get a different one. Happened. That was my Ohio coming out. Mm-hmm. The neighbor happened to get a different fork. So I have two sons. We've always had these forks as long as they can remember, and it's never been an issue. But this neighbor kid said to my son, "Why are you using a girl's fork?" And it upset me, maybe more than it should have. My son didn't think of the fork as a girl's fork until this kid said something. And he said it, and now my son doesn't want to use the fork anymore. A student once got me an end-of-year gift and a pen and a notebook, and the pen was a Bic for her pen, which is just a pink-colored pen. Ridiculous. Whether it's a pen, a fork, or a bag that you pee into, this kind of marketing is actually shaping how kids make judgments. Thanks as always. And I thought that example, I love this real world example, because that's the type of thing that I talk about a lot. I'll hear arguments like, I know we're not trying to gender our kids, but I got to say, my boy just really does like fire trucks more than my girl. And maybe it's not because you're living in a house where you're jamming that down their throats, but like, kids just pick up on all kinds of things from all kinds of places, whether it's a quick snippet of a commercial when they're watching a Lego thing on YouTube or what is it? Like, these unnecessary gendered things in our society, I think, are problematic, and I really appreciate Heidi's example there.
Yeah, that's some good on the ground anecdotal feedback about this. Yeah. I thank you, Heidi, for checking in on that. Thanks for describing something probably in a better way than we can. I mean, that's the whole challenge for us, Andrew, with this, is the experience that we can speak to with any real expertise is the experience that least needs to be spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that varies, whether it's, you know, parenting of young children, whether it's being a woman, whether it's being a queer, whether it's being a person of color, these are all things that you and I are the last people mm-hmm. that need to be chiming in on it. And yet our job is to chime in 5 days a week for 1 to 2 hours a day. So we're always full of apologies, and we're always stumbling all over ourselves. So anytime you, the listeners, who actually are living the life that we're talking about, please do check in with us, help us check our privilege, and also give us your feedback and your experience, because that's really the more useful information on all of these topics.
You know, I lied, though. I was at the end of this email, I started stumbling around a little bit and kind of paraphrasing it, and it does not say that Heidi's son does no longer wants to use that fork. I thought it said that, and I was reading it quickly and kind of scanning over things. So that maybe the son hasn't rejected the fork. So I'm sorry that I threw that in there. Mm-hmm. That's a straight up lie. Quick other correction. I don't know why.
Well, I know you're good at lying.
Well, I don't know why I went on some jag about some rant about how Subway is claiming to be bringing back $5 footlongs, only I noticed in the latest commercial for it, they say you have to buy two in order to get one for $5, or you have to buy two to get them each for $5. Listener Catherine, aka CBS, sent me a note, and I'll just summarize this one. And she says that Heidi's son no longer wants to use the pink fork. No, I'll summarize it and just say that she worked for Subway way back in the day, and that was always the deal. And people would come in and realize it, that it was a you have to buy two to get the $5 footlong, and they didn't make it super clear, and it would upset people.
That would suck to be the person who had to constantly explain to people. The version of that that I had that was not such a big deal, except this one time it was when I worked at Dick's Drive-In. People would get, oh, and can I get a couple of ketchups? And I would have to say to them, it's 5 cents a packet or little container. And they would get mad, and then I would try to explain, well, it's because you don't have to pay for the ketchup if you're not going to use the ketchup. It's not built into the cost of everything the way it is at, like, McDonald's. And people generally were like, okay, whatever. Or they'd been there enough that they knew that we charged for ketchup. But there was this one night where a guy who was drunk was not having that, and he tried to jump into the Dick's Drive-In to manhandle me. And he caught his shoulder on the glass, and it cracked the glass, and they had to close the restaurant the next day. And it was awesome because I got a Saturday off.
And this guy was going to attack you, and you kind of got the better of him without having to do anything.
Oh, yeah. I just jumped back. I was like, yikes.
Yeah. This is not a job that I'm willing to get assaulted for.
Absolutely not.
All right. Let's leave it there. I did get one email from somebody who is close to the deaf community and wanted to weigh in on the face masks issue. But I'd also like to see if anybody else writes in about that, and we can share those tomorrow.
Another topic that we tackled, even though we're not the people to tackle it.
Right. Exactly.
That seems to be our move of late. Okay. Cool. Well, I guess that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so very much for listening. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you, so hope you can join us for that. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Oh, good. Yeah. Glad you're going out with this. I was actually going to suggest it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Wanna say. Yep. Players gon' play when they wanna play. Long lay, on lay for a night like Luther Vandross ride. No way, that advance hat don't skip no days. Either meet her, greet her, treat her like a queen, then I give her that Peter Jack. That's how we procreate. Take care of my babies, I'ma tote the weight. I'ma carry the load and I'ma win the bread as well. No tricking off of my girl. Yo, chicken off of my girl. She thick with all of her curves. Plus she got a mind on her. Street smart, book smart, built by design for me. Gotta hold her up, cause she always holding me down. Like a bank robber with a note, give it to the teller so she know we ain't around.
It's your lucky day.
Power out.